The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsensewealth.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
This week, three key factors drove the financial markets: inflation data, oil inventories, and options expiration. Firstly, higher than expected inflation data from both the Consumer Price Index and Producer Price Index reports caused interest rates to rise. The Consumer Price Index rose 0.4% for February, with the core index up the same. One of the takeaways was the impact from the shelter index, which is expected to come down given the drop in rent prices recently. Investors would have liked to have seen the data come in under expectations, but the result wasn't enough to change expectations for a rate cut come June. Before the results, the CME FedWatch tool showed a 71.6% chance of rate cuts in June and only dropped to 69.8% after the Consumer Price Index. The results, however, impacted rate-sensitive sectors such as utilities and real estate. The Producer Price Index had similar results as the CPI in that it was higher than expected and showed a rebound in goods inflation, with the first positive change in 9 months, while services prices paid decelerated to 0.3% increase from 0.5% in January. This was the last look at inflation for the Fed before its meeting next week. Secondly, bullish oil inventory data and the persistent climb in oil and natural gas prices propelled the energy sector to the forefront of market performance, prompting a subtle shift of investment from other sectors into energy. Total commercial inventories drew 4.7 million barrels last week, even when the factor out the Strategic Petroleum Reserve's restocking of 0.6 million barrels. That's still a big draw, with year-to-date stock draws now at 33 million barrels. The important thing to note is that there aren't any short-term issues causing the draws, such as a refinery outage, coupled with the turn-up in manufacturing data we've seen in the ISM numbers, and this may just spell fundamental strength in the economy. Lastly, the week was marked by quarterly options expiration and associated rebalancing activities, potentially showing up in profit-taking in overextended areas and rallies in underperforming areas. To that end, Bitcoin dropped below 70,000 to hover right around 68,000 Friday, while popular mega-cap stocks experienced a temporary pullback with the rise in interest rates. It's too early to tell if the rotation has longer legs than just this week, given the lengthy run these stocks have had to current highs this year. Given the strength in materials and energy this week, this potential rotation from growth to late-stage cyclicals could signal a healthy market adjustment, even if the S&P experiences a downturn in the coming weeks due to the weighting held by technology and communication stocks. A rotation among sectors within the stock market is preferable to a risk-averse move towards cash and treasuries, especially considering the extended gains in the stock market since October. This rotation also lines up with the soft landing expectation and from a sector rotation model. Martin Pring wrote a nice article to that effect on StockCharge.com this week, highlighting the swing higher in gold that may be indicating investors are planning for a commodity price swing higher with inflationary consequences. We saw that in the Producer Price Index for February with goods prices rising, and we are now seeing it in higher oil prices with a head and shoulder bottom potentially completing with this week's break above $80 a barrel. If prices hold above 80, we could see higher prices soon. Next week is Central Bank Week. The Bank of Japan, Federal Reserve, and the European Central Bank will be meeting and announcing their policy stances. Recent chatter around Japan's consumer price index and wage data is causing many to think the bank will finally raise interest rates, with the Japanese government bond yields rising this week to 0.79% Friday. It will be interesting to see if this week's inflation data influenced our central bank any as they announce policy on Wednesday, with the European Central Bank to announce the following day on Thursday. That covers this week with inflationary data, energy outperformance, and bullish inventory data there, options expiration, and possible rebalancing happening for the quarterly early. Up next, our guest technician of the week, Mish Schneider.
So Woody, we've been speaking with you on our show for about 7 years about the ongoing developments and breakthroughs in artificial intelligence, I'm going to read the title of your most recent report here. AI's soaring carbon footprint will drive huge investments into more power-efficient chips. You end that with how to invest. So tell us, what's the big story here that people need to be aware of?
The generative AI models, the underlying technology for ChatGPT, so popular in the media right now, they are highly disruptive long-term. But what's interesting about it is the underlying technology, they consume an enormous amount of energy because they're trained on incomprehensible amounts of data. So I'll give you a specific example. To train a model 2 years back, the energy consumption was about 27 kilowatt hours. And for current transformers, this is a few months ago, it's more than 500,000 kilowatt hours. And so the number of parameters increased from maybe 50 million to 200 million. That's a fourfold increase. But the amount of energy went up 18,000 fold.
Wow.
So it's just growing so fast, and it's off the radar screen from the mainstream media for the most part.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button.
In 2 years, the expiration of the Trump tax cuts may result in higher taxes for many Americans. If you're tired of paying more taxes each year and want to keep more of your hard-earned money, consider reaching out to Financial Sense Wealth Management. Our team can assist you in creating a personalized financial plan aimed at lowering your taxes both now and in the future. With a custom-tailored approach, we can explore various options such as tax-free, tax-deferred, and tax-sheltered strategies to help alleviate your tax burden. By reducing your taxes, you'll have extra money in your pocket that can be used for spending, saving, or investing. Take the first step toward tax reduction by calling Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Our experienced advisors are ready to discuss your financial goals and design a plan that works for you. Remember, planning now can save you from paying more later. Financial Sense does not provide tax advice. Clients or prospects should consult with their own tax advisors to determine the potential tax benefits or consequences of engaging in a particular strategy or transaction.
Well, stocks are still having a good year despite the recent consolidation, but we have some other things that are occurring in the market, and that is commodities. Take a look at the price of oil or the price of gold, the price of water or other commodities. Let's find out what all this means. Joining us on the program is Mish from Market Gauge. Mish, let's begin with the S&P. It looks like a little consolidation here in the major indexes. What's your take as you look at the top?
Well, certainly right now, the fact that we got from 4,800 up to around 5,200 so fast, with so much money coming into it and so much euphoria, basically, that inflation would not tick up, it's not surprising that we are now pulling back a little bit on the heels of this week's CPI, PPI. However, I would think that if we were going to see some major crash from these levels or even a retest of 4,800, we needed to see a little bit more selling coming in. And instead, what we're seeing still is the dip buying. So at this point, there are calls for 6,100 in the SPY. It's possible if we continue to hold up here around this 5,100 level. But I think that is such a marginal piece of the whole story, because if you look at small caps, they have not been keeping up. They look like they were going to start. They sold off again in terms of the Russell 2000. And so the narrative is beginning to change with this recent inflation data, and that could affect the SPY. But the conversation is starting to look more stagflationary. So it'll be interesting to see what develops from here.
And speaking of that, I want to talk about, we've got interest rates backing up. And, you know, the street is thinking, hey, 3 rate cuts, they start this summer. Powell has sort of intimated, well, they're coming, we can't tell you when. But then you start looking at the inflation numbers, and I want to move to one commodity in particular, and that's the oil markets, because the drop in commodity prices or the CPI last year, a lot of it had to play with energy coming down, but they also released, I think, what was it, 300 million barrels from the SPR, and it's not just us, it was the Europeans. So what happens if we get these inflation numbers, as we've been getting, they stay stronger for longer? What does that do to the 3 cuts and we're on our way scenario?
Okay, that's yeah, there's so much to that question. So let me kind of step back a little bit. And I really want to cover two areas. One is, what are the signs that inflation is getting out of control? Because I'm probably one of the few people that are in the whole world here of trading that's active on social media and in media that was alive when we saw it, and not just alive, but trading it. So we'll talk about that. And one of those signs, of course, would be oil. And then in terms of what happens with the Federal Reserve and the kind of quagmire that is potential, but also possibly good news. So yeah, all right, so let's start with the signs of inflation. The fact is right now is we have seen, obviously, inflation, it's stopped going down, it's come up a bit. And it, the question is, does it just sort of level off at these areas right now with CPI at around 3.2 and producer price index around 4.1? I guess we'll have a new PCE. We have the Fed meeting coming up next week. If it levels off here, it makes sense that the rates could actually at these levels, at the Fed funds rate around 5.5% versus the rate of inflation, we get this level of normalization. And that's what the no landing people are talking about, myself included, means. Simply means that the economy is doing well, inflation continues, but it doesn't continue to get really, really sticky. And so that would be the best scenario. But of course, we know that we always climb the wall of worry. So before we actually start screaming more inflation or stagflation, and we certainly have numbers to support that possibility too, what do I look for in terms of the signs of inflation? So number one is, let's talk about oil since you asked. We thought that $80 a barrel was an extremely important number. Just like with gold, we thought $2,100 was an extremely important number. And we thought $24 in silver was an extremely important number. So going back to oil, if it holds here above $80 a barrel, and especially from a seasonal standpoint, we're going to get into a strong seasonal period with oil as the weather gets warmer and people start to go out again. It is possible that, especially since we're getting mixed stories, but the demand looks like it's rising, that we go over 80 and then we go over 85. We see $100 a barrel like that. And I think people are going to get really nervous, including the Fed. But it hasn't happened yet. The fact that it's over 80 makes you pay attention. But it doesn't make us go into like, oh, yeah, let's go full on hog wild inflation plays. Although statistically, right now, since 1933, if you track these periods of inflation, there's some will say that in the next 15 years, commodities should be outperforming equities by 3 to 1, which would make a lot of sense considering how much equities have been outperforming commodities. But anyway, heading back. So that's kind of what I look at oil. I think oil is so highly technical, and I traded oil in NYMEX for years. We had this OPEC knowledge constantly and all these stats around us, but basically we traded price. So that's my price level. Over 80, you've got to be friendly. Over 85, you got to get a lot more bullish and then look at the implication. The second sign is, let's talk about gold. And more importantly to me right now is the relationship to silver. So silver is a funny little metal. It's a precious metal, but it's also an industrial metal. And yet it's done well when the economy's done well, but not nearly as well as the equities have, number one. And number two, in inflationary times, it can be like the poor man's metal to gold. And in 1979, it outperformed gold. And that's another inflationary indicator. Gold's gotten through 2100. It's kind of consolidating right now between like 2140 and 2190, let's say. There are reports that it could go to 2,500. I had said a couple of years ago, I thought it could go to 3,000. It doesn't really matter. Right now, all we know is that it broke out. It's sitting in the new all-time high territory, and it's laying in wait with still a lot of investors not invested in gold. We're still, especially in the Western countries, underinvested in gold. And if silver continues its flight and starts to begin to outperform gold, another inflationary sign along with oil. And then, you know, something that I've talked about a lot is sugar. And the reason why I like to look at sugar is because, first of all, in this whole disinflation narrative that we've heard on so many different areas, sugar went from 5 cents in 2020 to up to 28 cents in 2023. It's trading at 22 cents right now, still over four times what it was in 2020. And sugar is in everything. So it's a great barometer. And again, in 79, sugar went up to about 40, 45 cents a pound as silver was going up and gold was going up. So I think we have to watch sugar. If it continues to hold over 20 cents and stays over 22, gets over 23, that's really my third indication for inflation. At this point, we can say we're heading in that direction, but we shouldn't panic yet.
I want to come back to gold for a minute because you hardly hear anybody talking about it. And the fact that it's been holding above 2,000 for, 16 weeks now, we monitor what's flowing out of the COMEX. And I think it's 40,000 tons or whatever that figure is. And there's talk about a lot of countries that used to keep their gold here because we were considered the world superpower, peace in the world. This is a place, if you were in South America, you kept your gold here. They're pulling it out because they saw what we did with the Russians. Nobody's talking about that. And I think a reporter asked Jay Powell about it, and he kind of obfuscated and basically avoided the subject. But what about that? I mean, when you have China, when you have Russia, when you have India, when you have countries in OPEC, you have Brazil that are trading in yuan, and then also taking that excess yuan and getting gold, what's the implications of that? It's like a subtle move away from the dollar. I don't think, because I don't see, Mish, any currency that's strong enough to replace the dollar. I don't see the euro. I don't see the Chinese yuan. Don't see the Japanese yen. But what about if gold becomes a currency again?
Well, there's certainly been talk about that, including, by the way, from Russia has been talking about that, pricing oil in gold. Well, it would be another case of, I think, a myopic monetary policy that doesn't necessarily always want to recognize, just like you said, what could happen if all of a sudden we found ourselves with a shortage of gold as other countries are stockpiling. And certainly that China's been, I think, at the top of that list. But the gold is basically telling us that it's just not been volatile. I mean, you could argue it's because Bitcoin's become all the rage. You can argue because people still believe that gold is this flight to safety, but not necessarily an inflationary indicator. And, you know, it makes sense for it to be up here, but really shouldn't go much higher because, you know, we're going to still have these chances of a soft landing and the economy is growing. It's really hard to get pinpoint. But again, as a commodities trader, these are the kinds of things that, I hate to talk about and love to talk about because it's exciting as a trader to be looking at what's happening with gold. And as I mentioned before, with silver as well, in that, what is it really telling us? And if we continue to hold here and we get back up through not only these recent levels, but we start to climb over 22 at some point, and this is exactly what commodities do, Jim, is they go parabolic when they get uber emotional. And that's why I gave you all the signs of what to look for. We're not at the uber emotion yet. We're right now just, you know, kind of wringing our hands, those of us who understand commodities, and wondering when the rest of the people will have to wake up and go, oh, crap, you know, I better get on that boat.
Yeah, because recently, I think it was last week in Barron's, they were talking about gold and nobody's talking about it. But they also talked about gold stocks because they were lagging gold. But if you take a look at, for example, GDX is starting to break out. So the gold stocks are starting to come alive. So isn't that another indicator that there may be something to this move?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up gold miners because we bought GDX and we've been sitting with it. Obviously, we have a hard line stop if it breaks the most recent lows. But for the most part, we believe that, again, it's extremely undervalued. And typically, gold miners will lead gold, and we haven't seen that happen. So all these relationships that people sink their teeth into and trade by, they're aberrations when they change. It happens all the time, just like the inverted yield curve. Definitely, we're going to recession, and we haven't seen that yet. So yeah, I think that you really have to look at these gold miners. The fact that GDX is flirting with this $30 level, which also means it's cleared some major moving averages. If it holds up here, again, it'll be another one of those things that we just talked about, where you'll get some kind of a, all of a sudden, flight into it, liquidity chasing it, some kind of panic mode. Oh God, we have to buy it. And next thing you know, you'll see GDX fly up. And of course, that's the thing that will bring gold probably closer to that 2,500 level.
And the other thing that I think about this area too, commodities is such a small area outside the oil market. When you consider, I mean, take a look at the market cap of some of the Mag 7 stocks. So if all of a sudden investors, which they can do easily today through ETF, say, oh my God, I got to be in that. And that money starts rushing in. It's such a small area. You get these parabolic moves that you've been talking about.
Precisely. And you know what I always try to remind people is that stocks are a little bit manipulated with big corporate buybacks, and you get people who are compounding, and you get this massive rush into equities from financial planners and hedge funds and things like that. But raw materials are raw materials, and when all of a sudden people are worried about raw materials being in a shortage. And of course, we know everything is cyclical, so nothing really goes completely depleted, at least not yet, and hopefully not in our lifetime. Yeah, that's when they become really fun to trade. And you cannot be afraid to buy strength in commodities because they haven't been strong. So when they get strong, it's probably exactly what you just said, Jim, a sign that money's starting to really come in.
You know, there was a book written, I think at the end of the 90s, it was called Triumph of the Optimist, and it's by professors out of London. They recently did an update, and they said one of the best ways to hedge a portfolio, because everybody is aware of the 60-40 split, 60 equities, 40 bonds, and that worked well for most of the time. One of the best hedges, they said, was commodities. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. So if you're worried about inflation, you're worried about geopolitical events, what's going to happen in the election, commodities is one area that you hedge. And I've seen Goring and Rosenzweig has this chart that they've done over 100 years on commodities. And it's the lowest I've seen it in over 100 years.
Oh, so, yeah. No, it's crazy. And you know, and just kind of also, you know, add to that, that we have obviously a huge amount of government spending. And the debt that keeps growing, and although that doesn't seem like it's the bubble that everybody keeps expecting has burst, at some point it could. It's certainly not getting any better, let's put it that way.
Yes, it's hard to realize that we're adding $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. I mean, that is huge, but so far the market seems to ignore that. I want to talk about something you and I were talking about before we went on the air, and that's the role of index funds and how that's reshaping the markets. Two people recently, Bill Ackman at Pershing Square, came out on basically intimating it's somewhat of a bubble, all this money going into index funds. Lynn Alden, she talked about this same thing. In fact, she wrote a long article on it. And people don't understand, and what Ackman was talking about 20 years ago, you had active fund managers. They would look at a stock and say, no, that's too expensive. That doesn't have the intrinsic value. I'm going to go someplace else. Well, if you take a look at an index fund, I'm trying to think, it was Mike Green that said, you want to understand an index fund? Give me money, I buy. You ask for money, I sell. That's all you need to know about an index fund. But let's talk about how that's kind of shaping the market in many ways. How do we get the Mag 7? We get the Mag 7 stock buybacks, throw in index funds, and voila.
Well, there is a theory, and this is what a lot of our algorithmic models are based on, using trend strength indicators, that the top 25% outperformers continue to outperform 25% of the time. And clearly, really, since 2023, after we got through the little mini crash in March because of the banks, that's exactly what's happening. It's been completely the opposite of what a lot of people and what you just said had ordinarily done, which is you don't really want to chase momentum. You kind of more think that, oh my God, that's going to burst at some point. And everybody's chased momentum, and it's worked. You know, how many people call the top in NVIDIA at 500, then at 800, then, well, now it looks like maybe it got close to 1,000. It's coming off, but how deeply is it coming off? The point is that this type of mentality of the strong keep getting stronger works to a certain point. But you and I have just spelled out all the reasons why that could stop. And mainly, of course, that would be if there was any real serious concern to inflation. Now, growth stocks will continue to outperform, particularly AI stocks, because that is a mega trend of the future. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean that they're going to stay at these lofty valuations if people start to worry about pulling their money out because they need more money, A, just to live, number one. And number two is they decide to hedge more and get back not only into commodities, but one thing we didn't talk about, which is the long bonds. So the relationship, this is so key here, to SPY, the S&P 500, typical in the index fund, versus the long bonds is so important. Right now, SPY has basically been outperforming TLTs. They get these little blips once in a while, but for the most part, the SPY has been well outperforming. If we start to see money flowing back into the long bonds, regardless of what the Fed says about cuts, that tells you that there's a little bit of a flight to safety. And when the long bonds start to really, in more than just a day or two, outperform the S&P 500, you're going to see exactly what that person said, which is, I need money, it's time to sell. So I always like to be aware of these things, but until you see them really technically happen, I wouldn't be afraid. But when they do happen, you have to be quick to pivot.
Yeah, because I think people forgot what happened to these Mag 7 stocks in 2022, where you had some of them down 60%. Because once again, as we just talked about, money comes out of an index fund, 30 cents of every dollar coming out is coming out of those big stocks, and they got hit the hardest. I want to talk about going forward. We talked about a number of things that we need to keep an eye on. Watch sugar, take a look at the gold-silver ratio, especially what's happening with silver, and then, of course, what's going to happen with oil. One of the things that I had heard in the past, and you mentioned it's not working now, small caps look like they were starting to get some liftoff. So their talk was, well, this rally is starting to broaden. You've got the small caps moving, but that stopped. So What is all this telling you?
Well, you know, and I love to look at the small caps in my Economic Modern Family that I created, my God, almost 10 years ago now. That's Grandpa. And the reason why I like to remind people it's Grandpa, because I consider it to be really the granddaddy of the U.S. economy, in that you can't really measure how much our economy is growing if you're not looking at the companies that manufacture and produce within the United States. And even though we've seen money going towards the CHIP Act and infrastructure, we're still not really seeing the reshoring that could happen in 2025, 2026, that's going to give the small caps a boost. So what does that mean? It means to me that any growth we see in GDP has been a lot because of the government, and that we could be really heading more towards a stagflation environment, something that I've talked about. I just dug up an article I wrote in July about it, and I know you and I even talked about it a year ago, so it's been there kind of in the background. And that's what possibly the small caps are telling us, is that the economy, it may not go into major recession. It could just sputter and stagnate while inflation may or may not continue to rise until such time the Fed has to be super aggressive, in which case, just like what happened in 79 and 80, we go briefly into a recession and then we come out into some kind of period of growth. You know, long term, you always have to be somewhat optimistic.
And I just wonder if you take a look at this, we're going to see something kind of like what happened in Japan. Japan kept lower interest rates, they kept spending money, and it seems like we have this perpetual stimulus in fiscal spending, as some have called it, fiscal dominance now. I don't hear anybody in either party talking about the deficit. I don't hear anybody talking about, we need to cut this, we're going to cut defense, we're going to cut Social Security. I mean, these are non-touchables. So what's the possibility they just keep doing this? We keep spending money, and what we get is the outcome you're talking about, stagflation.
It's a very strong possibility. I mean, you mentioned in terms of the parties, I mean, the government has had a pretty long history now of spending money. It's just what the different parties spend money on different things. To me, they both are very guilty of having an open checkbook. It's just that maybe the Democrats like more on the social side of things and the Republicans like it more on the military side of things. what have you, or cutting taxes, which in essence, of course, doesn't necessarily always stimulate the economy as they hope. I mean, you know, we can get into that whole thing, but essentially, I would not count on the government to rescue us from a potential stagflation. If anything, they're fueling the fire, no matter what side it's on. And all these proposals that we're hearing for more ways to stimulate, with now giving some kind of incentive for first-time home buyers. You know, these are the kinds of things you do when you're coming out of recession, not when you're going into potentially a second wave of inflation. So it does make you scratch your head a little bit.
Yeah, and you just brought up a point on both parties. Trump cut corporate tax rates from 35 to 21. The idea was, well, if we do that, you're going to come back and you're going to build factories. But my contention is, you're not going to build a factory until marketing says, hey, we can't keep up with demand. So what happened? We had record stock buybacks instead.
Right.
So I take a look at that. And what does that mean going forward? Let's say in 2026, maybe they compromise and we go from 21% to 28%. What's that going to do to corporate profits, number one? And number two, you had a lot of these corporations that refinanced their debt, and that boosted earnings, because if you had a 7% bond, you refinanced it at 3%. A third of that is going to be coming due, I think it's between 2025 and 2028. So what happens when you start rolling over a 3% bond and you're paying 6%? What happens when you have profits that are taxed at 28%, not 21%? What's the implication there?
Well, of course. And you know, it's so interesting. We just watched a series on Netflix. I know you and I have talked about some of the things we like to watch on Netflix. And this one was called Warrior. And what really struck me about it is that it takes place in 1870s, after the Civil War in San Francisco, when the Irish immigrants were already here, having built the railroads, and they brought in the Chinese immigrants, and they were coming in by the boatload. And of course, they were working for even cheaper than the Irish. And then that created a lot of just social unrest. And I'm being polite, because obviously the series is uber dramatic. But nonetheless, the point is as I'm watching this and listening to the politicians in terms of that period of time, some talking about the Exclusion Act and some saying, well, for industrial growth, we need this cheap labor. It kind of brings it to point what's happening right now, which is, if you want to bring this industry back to the United States, then you also obviously have to pay higher wages to keep up with the cost of inflation. And of course, you also have a lot of people who don't even want to work in those type of jobs anymore. You know, so there's so many different factors to look at. It's kind of, in some ways, scary and in some ways fun, because we don't really know how it's going to play out. Will we get corporate taxes back up to 28? I think the Biden administration was actually saying more like 25, not 28. Will that mean corporations leave? Well, we also have trade wars with China, which the Trump administration says that they're going to escalate. So, you know, it's really hard to say. But let's say that in a perfect world, the corporate tax rate goes up just a little bit, not enough to hurt anybody or really hurt the corporate earnings. We do see somewhat reshoring coming in. The consumer, we haven't even talked about, stays strong enough to be able to continue to do the things that we've been counting on to keep retail sales well without inflation getting in. And this all basically with AI and reshoring and now, you know, a new consumer, I still believe, with weight loss drugs possibly giving us a whole percentage of Americans going out and spending money on themselves that they hadn't done because they've been secretly suffering with obesity, then we can get through all of this. But at what cost and what happens in between? That's what makes this so much fun. Nobody really knows for sure.
All right. So as we conclude, you talk about keeping your eye out, watch oil, make sure it holds above 80 if it moves up, following the gold silver market, and especially silver, if you start to see silver become even stronger.
Right.
You talked about sugar. And one we didn't have time to get to is water, but also watch what's going on with commodities. So if you had some dollars to put to work here now, anything look stand out or look attractive to you that say, hey, I got to be there?
Well, we're already in silver and gold, and we're in oil. I'm watching the TLTs very carefully. 92 has been a really strong support level, and it's sold off in the last couple of days in reaction to the inflation numbers, but if it holds here and starts to creep up, I think we could see that sea change more into the stagflation, in which case the bonds can actually grab a bid. DVA's been on new highs, and we didn't get a chance really to talk about Bitcoin, but I'd like to see some correction down to around 52,000, 53,000. Otherwise, right now, I still think with the halving coming, we have a supply problem, but that doesn't necessarily always translate into price movement. And then outside of the commodities world and in the Bitcoin world, I think at some point, the solar stocks that have gotten so beat up, particularly if we have more of a Biden administration, will be a really good value and something to be looking at as we go into 2025.
All right. Well, listen, Misha, I always enjoy speaking with you. We cover so many topics. Tell our listeners about a lot of the things that you guys put out. Some great stuff, by the way.
Well, thank you, Jim, for asking. Well, we have a publishing company, Market Gauge, and what that has is all these different quant models that basically really give you an edge because it covers all different asset classes. And so essentially what it does is it smooths out results because we know that there's always a bull market somewhere and the idea is to catch that edge and get it. And that's, you know, something that we have to look at, not to mention a lot of other tools and a lot of content. And then we have an asset management company, which is called Market Gauge Asset Management Company, where we run a lot of these blends based on risk appetite, running other people's money. Me personally, I'm a discretionary trader, so I have a piece of the fund with that. And also, obviously, a big contributor to both social media and regular media, including my time with you, which I so appreciate. I'm on X at Market Minute. MarketGauge.com is our website. You can send me an email at Misha at Market Gauge. You can even go to the site and speak with Mary, our customer service. So, yeah. We're easy to find.
All right. Well, listen, you have a great weekend, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can visit us on our website, financialsensewealth.com. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, go to the Financial Sense website and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of the Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.